Here at Jokoji, we've had some issues recently about practice and practitioners and non-practitioners. So it made me think about who's really practicing. Are non-practicing practitioners practicing? Are they practical or impractical practitioners that are practicing? Who's coming to practice? And after a nice tea, when you sip the tea, who are you serving? Which of the 70 trillion cells in our body are we serving, or all of them? Because they all show up. And I wonder sometimes our thirst, when we're really, really thirsty, is it here? Is it here somewhere? Is it just our cells screaming? Who's showing up for that? There's all different kinds of practice. And even ourselves, I think, practice. You know, a single cell has enough DNA in it to about a meter long. And it's, of course, chopped up into little pieces, and each one's folded and refolded and folded again. Endless twisted karma of DNA. So when we think, I'm practicing, I'm doing a pretty good job, I think there are a lot of cells in our body that aren't fooled. But somewhere in us, maybe something is, until we wake up to the endless, the beginningless sustenance we get. Red Pine, in his preface to the Diamond Sutra, he says, most people look for enlightenment in the future. Buddhists find it in the past. And I'd like some, see what you think about that. But for me, here we are. We're at the summation of the universe as it is right in this moment. The past is coming right at us, and here it is, and we have to deal with it. Unfortunately, we can be pleasantly distracted and think about the future and think about the past and think about what we want to do. But seeing how it is like endless, uninterrupted summation of this makes this what it is right now. Lex Hickson in this Mother of the Buddhas, and I forget which of the Prajnaparamitas it is, if it's the 10,000 words or the 25,000 words. Talking about Prajna Paramita, the sixth paramita after gratitude and generosity, morality, vigor, forbearance, meditation is the Prajna Paramita. The way Lex translates this, he says, Lord Buddha rightly calls the foremost among those who dwell in the inconceivable peace of perfect wisdom. Precisely through such clear recognition of the ontological transparency of subjects and objects does the bodhisattva become unwaveringly focused upon universal enlightenment. Ontological transparency is like transparent essence, transparent being, the transparency of essence, the transparency of being of all subjects and objects. And when a bodhisattva is unwaveringly focused on that, that's universal enlightenment. So my practice of being an engineer, being some kind of a priest, I still don't know what it is. Angie says it's a step down. And that's helpful. But it's still important to show up. Last weekend, I had a seminar, the spot called Shogaku Priest Ordination Training, that there are four teachers, Angie, Grace Shearson, Lou Richmond, and Steve Stuckey from San Francisco Zen Center, four Zen masters teaching about 30 of us, some ordained priests, some lay ordained teachers, some to be ordained. It's quite a interesting sangha of people. We show up every couple months. But a few days before I was to go, my truck disappeared. And all my robes were up here. Usually everybody dresses in robes for morning zazen and puts on the ukesa, and we go through that. And then the rest of the day we were all wearing just our rakusus. And I just felt like really out of place not going with my robes. And I emailed Angie and Grace, and Angie said, "Oh, I'm so sorry for your trouble." And Grace wrote back, "One foot after the other, just come." So I thought, That's a relief. You know, I'll figure out a way to get there. That's always the adventure of going as part of, for me, is always a lot of the fun. Because you never know what happens. Usually it's like, oh, I need to get a ride. I need to... You're just fixated on just a very limited options. You're thinking in very limited terms of how to go, but I knew I could figure out a way to get there. So I went into work early and took care of stuff and hopped on BART, went to the Richmond station, which is right next to the Amtrak station, and got a ticket for Amtrak over to Madeira, because this class was up in North Fork, just south of Yosemite, at about the same elevation we are here. And Grace and her husband have a property up there, and Zendo, the empty nest Zendo, and Angie's gone there for years. Have you ever gone there for Sashin? Don Lynn and Angie have gone there for many times. I don't know if anybody else here has been there, but it's in the foothills, and some barren mountain peaks are visible. But I got to Madeira, which is about 40 miles away, on the train, and got off at the train station, and it's about as developed as a bus stop. It had like a little bench and a protective cover, and nobody manning it. But there was a contractor working there. They were going to put in a bathroom in the coming months, and one of the guys there was an engineer. And I went up to him and I said, I need to get to Highway 41. Is it very far from here? And then I let it slip out that I work on the Transbay Terminal. And he... He says, well, I can take you partway in about 15 minutes. So, no cars around, some neighborhoods in the distance. So 15 minutes later, he wraps up with the contractor that's there, and I hop in with him. And we have a really delightful drive and conversation. Because he's an engineer, I'm an engineer, and engineers like to talk about all sorts of stuff. And that's one of the delightful aspects of hitchhiking for me, is oftentimes I really feel ebullient, I think is the word. Just on, I don't know. Maybe I talk too much, but I'm just jazzed. It's just fun to be with the people that I'm with and find out what they're interested in and just have a good conversation. We did, and he let me out at this place on the very eastern part of town, about 5 miles from Highway 41 that runs from Paso Robles up to Yosemite. And said our goodbyes and exchanged business cards. And I always like to stand up with my backpack on and look presentable, kind of look at who's coming, and they can look at me, because it's a two-way street when you're hitchhiking. It's not like any ride is going to do. It's like they're checking you out, you're checking them out. You've hitchhiked a little. So this kid about Zach's age, the third car drives by, and this kid pulls over, and I hop in, and he's a chaplain for Seventh-day Adventist, a youth chaplain. Doesn't know what to do with his life. Had imagined himself being an engineer when he was a kid, and that was a mistake for him to say. Because I just strongly encouraged him to get into engineering. There's always going to be more work. There always is. It's a necessary thing. And we even talked about Zen. and meditation and the feeling of spaciousness and things. So we got up to Highway 41. And I'm getting ready to get out of his car. He pulls over. And he looks at me. He says, "I'm going to take you all the way." I said, "Are you sure? Are you sure you want to do that?" He said, "Yeah. I don't have anything until 5:30. It was only like 2:30 in the afternoon." So we keep driving up the road and keep talking. And took me all the way there in the 1 mile dirt road to let me off right by the Zendo. Gave him some gas money. Hope he comes to visit here at Jokoji. No, he might. Kid from Missouri. And then I set down my backpack and take off my shoes, and I can tell that the 30 of my colleagues and the three teachers are there. Angie couldn't make it because of her hip. So I open the door and walk in to applause, and everybody claps for me, you know? That feels a little awkward, but almost not unexpected, because, you know, I lost my truck and I made it. So they finished up the talk at that stage, and they break, and I go out to the snack table, and Tim Wicks comes up to me, and he says, "Doug, how come when I'm late, I get reprimanded? And when you're late, everybody claps." It's in the setup. For me, it's like just being totally wholehearted and trusting completely. Just there's no aspect of spirituality about it. It's just like, this is, I got to get there, and how am I going to, you know, and who's going to pick me up, and just taking best care of whoever it is, and going for it. And of course, endless mistakes get made too. But it's when stuff like that happens, it's really fun. You know, life is pretty good and pretty fun. And just it's reassuring that there are ways to, I use this word maybe too much, navigate to get to where we're going, to get where I'm going. We get to where we're going. In the Diamond Sutra, it says the Buddha entrusts Bodhisattva with trust. And I think we were talking about faith and trust yesterday. And I don't know if it helps to hear that the Buddha entrusts Bodhisattvas with trust. I don't know where it comes from. But when we can throw ourselves wholeheartedly into what we do, we can manage to keep going somehow. And that to me is pretty fundamental, one of the many, many aspects of practice. So what's practice and who's practicing? Anybody have anything?
Maybe it's better that you didn't have your ropes when you were hitchhiking. What do you think? That might have been part of the whole plan.
They would have fit in my backpack. I mean, you don't go
wearing them.
You don't wear them.
That's the joke.
That's the joke. Okay.
Sorry. Just had this picture of you standing on the side of the road.
Well, when I got there and Grace found out that I had no robes, she said, "Good, go commando." And that usually refers to women going without underwear, right? Isn't that how it? I don't know. Have you ever heard that before?
I thought it was men.
Men going without.
I think it'd be men or women.
That's a euphemism for going without underwear.
Yes.
What did you mean?
Well, of course, do you wear these on the inside? I mean, you're wearing them on the outside, but I think she wanted to just make a strong joke like she's inclined to. Make strong points. So have you ever hitchhiked with ropes?
No. Last time I hitchhiked was in Hawaii. It's a pretty interesting place to hitchhike when you're a howly boy from the mainland. It can be a little dangerous.
Barbara?
Would you like to tell your story about the robes?
Ah, my lost robes, yeah.
Another lost robes story.
Yeah. When I went to visit Barbara, the plane got diverted. It was supposed to go into Washington and then fly to...
Harrisburg?
It was supposed to fly to State College, which is her mm-hmm. airport. They were going to pick me up. But a storm diverted the plane into Baltimore, and I had to stay overnight in the airport in Baltimore. And my bag didn't show up, and they finally routed me from Baltimore to Harrisburg, and then you picked me up in Harrisburg, which is what, 50 miles away?
Yeah, 50 miles.
Good 50 miles.
About 2 hour drive.
Yeah. And so, and that, the next morning, so Barbara and Cole picked me up, and I was expecting my bag to be at the airport there, and it wasn't there. It didn't follow me there. It was supposed to follow me there. And so, how many days was it? Was it three days? Yeah, 3 days. And apparently my bag went from Baltimore to Washington, from Washington to State College, from Washington to State College, from State College back to Washington, and then to Harrisburg. And then somehow it got... maybe I'm reversing it. Anyway, it got lost. And finally, on the last day, I was... the bag showed up, right? Yeah.
Well, the interesting feature of that was that Michael was coming to teach mostly beginners at Owen Zendo. And everybody they knew he was my teacher, and we haven't had many auspicious people coming like that, like Michael. And so part of the whole deal was that he come with his robes and his all of his paraphernalia. And so all of these beginning Zen students were waiting for this apparition of black robes to show up, you know, and of course we were promoting it. Really marketing Michael, you know.
Well, it was Zen forums, too. It was like we were going to teach Zen forums and Oryoki.
And so it seemed that's all part of it.
I didn't have the uniform.
And he was very cool about it all. And some of the sort of administrative people in the Sangha were going crazy trying to find where his robes were, where his luggage was, and calling and, you know, calling all around, way up into the early morning hours. They were on the phone. And he's... that those robes were going to be taken care of. You know, those robes, it was almost as if there was a little bit of a sense that I had. You know how you sort of play with losing something and seeing how frantic you get about it and how attached you are, or, you know, sort of, there was almost an element of deliberateness about...
Yeah, I planned it all.
Losing the robes. I had this just sense that there was some element of...
It's a special teaching brought to you by Continental Airlines.
And it was a teaching. It was a more profound teaching for us, watching him deal with these lost robes, which was like, it was like he had to borrow a t-shirt from the man I live with. And he was walking around.
Actually, I had a whole bunch of t-shirts from Chuck.
He was walking around like just an ordinary guy.
Imagine that.
Teaching the Dharma.
Being the Dharma.
Being the Dharma.
That was the difference. He was being the Dharma. That was the teaching. Mm-hmm. And it was a profound teaching, much more profound than anything he could have said. It was witnessing.
By the way, you all have to go to visit Barbara on Zenmo. You've been there already.
I did. And I was there a couple weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful.
Did you show her the new shrine, the Jizo shrine?
No, we got blabbering.
Yeah, we did.
So we didn't have much time. She'll be back. Mm-hmm. And everybody's invited.
So the truck showed up?
It's fully loaded with some big madrone right now. Right up here. So we went harvesting across the street.
Do you know what the story of the truck is? How?
Somebody
borrowed it.
It's an easy borrow. They borrowed it. It's easy to break into, and drove it not too far. I think they used up half a tank of gas. Didn't take much out of it, and there wasn't much to take. And it came back as I was on the train to Madeira. So I called my wife Susan and said the truck came back. It's in Oakland. She lives in Berkeley. And so she went on a mission to retrieve it, which is a whole nother story. That created a lot of turmoil in between her and her cousin, which is who I live with when I'm in the East Bay, when I'm during the week. Robert, I think some who are here from my ordination might remember him, long ponytail, a Jungian psychiatrist. He and my wife are a lot alike. And just can't stand each other. And I like them both. So But the truck's back and it's in use. Zach.
I liked what you said. You said something to the effect when you were talking about the past coming and kind of culminating right now. And then you just made some offhand remark about or we can maybe have nice thoughts about the future or something. And just you saying that was really helpful to me because I find myself oftentimes on the last full day of Sesshin, it's like there's like this weight kind of lifted, which is nice. We've kind of made it over the hump, but then I find myself drifting into, you know, what am I going to do tomorrow? And future thoughts a lot. So that little remark was helpful just to, you know, recognize that. And sometimes it's hard for me to stay here in the last day of Sesshin, but I also just like the hitchhiking story. I hitchhiked for my first time recently in New Mexico, actually out of Seco, which you mentioned earlier over tea, because I was at Hokoji in August, I guess it was. But I don't know how much this applies to our, you know, practice or your question, really. But I just, I almost thought with your comment about the robes, it, in a way, like it almost seems like it would have been appropriate. I mean, not really, but it makes me think of, you know, the sort of archetypal image of the traveling homeless monk and robes. And I think they're really, when I was traveling for about a month in August, I'd never done anything like that. And I did feel, like you said, I kept having the thought of the image on the cover of, I don't know if you've seen at least one of the covers for Uchiyama's commentary on Dogen's Bendawa, Wholehearted Way, I think is what it's called. And it has this little picture of like a traveling, like little woodblock print or something of a traveling monk or something. And I really like that image. And I kept thinking about that as I was traveling across the Southwest. And there really is something amazing to like throwing yourself, putting yourself out there like that and totally trusting, because I didn't know where I was going to sleep most nights. And that the universe just kind of comes in and like provides for you. And my first time hitchhiking, it was like the second or third car, and it was this big red Ford pickup truck that said Redneck really big across the nation. And he stopped and picked me up, and it turned out he had bought the car used and the sticker was on it. From Texas, and I was trying to get from Seco over to Raton, which is like 120 miles, and I said, can you just get me into town and Taos, and I'm going to make a sign and try to get over there. He said, oh yeah, that's fine. He goes, I was just going to come up here and turn around. He goes, I'm about to drive up through the mountains, the scenic route to Raton, but if you just want to get to town, that's fine. You know, I actually have to get to Raton. He goes, oh, well, why don't you come with me? He ends up telling me all about the mountains, and does this. We ended up in Colorado and then back down. It's just like, and then as I was getting out of his truck, he goes, and he didn't strike me as any kind of like overtly religious person or anything like that, but he goes, you know, take care, et cetera, et cetera. He goes, I'd say you have some divine help. You're getting some divine help there, so be well in your travels or something like that. It was really this, like, amazing moment. And I just, I don't know, that was really important to me. And it, yeah, it just made me think of the traveling monk and the wholehearted trust that you talked about. And for me, it did have a lot to do with what we do here, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Why are we going to Raton?
I had to catch an Amtrak out of Raton to get to Arizona, so...
Oh, I see.
Yeah, my whole journey...
The rail line goes... Yeah,
so it's been sort of forward and backward and forward and backward the whole way. In many ways, I guess.
Well, during the rest of our journey, during the Sesshin, I wanted to... talk about one other thing. You know, you and Cliff were talking about not knowing where the hara is, that you're in your head so much. And it made me think, when you're in your head so much, where is it that the pressure is? Is it like when you close your mouth, the top of your tongue is hitting the roof of your mouth? Maybe that's, for your head, that might be where the hara is. But I also want to give you this image that in our life, we only have a fixed number of breaths we take. And I forget the number, if it's in the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, but it's a fixed number we have. And normally people breathe very shallowly. And our lungs, the mass of our lungs, you know, is maybe occupies this much space. And in the middle of it is our heart. That's going. So our breathing and our heart are directly connected. They're, of course, the blood's going, receiving the oxygenated blood from our lungs, but there's that, it is feeling our heart all the time. And so, and our even though our lungs appear to be this small, the surface area of them that receives the oxygen we breathe in, I don't know how many of you have done the blowing test at the doctor's office where you go, and maybe you can blow up a balloon maybe this much. But the surface area of our lungs is almost the surface area of this room. It's about 70 square meters. Now you can take a piece of paper and fold it and refold it and fold it again. But that air that we're breathing in is finding those passageways. And so when breathing during Zazen, we're encouraged to take a full breath. And one must be pretty mindful to take a full breath, because usually when you're not, you're just breathing shallowly. So when you take a full breath and it fills up, your diaphragm is as full as it can be, then basically you're using your hara to let some more air come in. And then when you exhale all the oxygen, and the very last bit that you can actually completely remove, you can feel your hara. Now, whether that is the center of gravity, it is. I haven't studied the spiritual aspects of the chakras and all that, but you know, the hara is known for being pretty important. But that's one way to have mindful, full body Zazen. And it's also a way, as one of my dear colleagues here has said, to prepare to die. Because at some point, we're going to be on our last exhalation.